24. It is June 19th, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 648 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. Sorry we had no show last week. That was my fault. That is corrected this week with, of course, the great Allison Futter, national correspondent for MLB.com at Allison Futter. How's it going, Allison?
All good. I'm back in Houston after a crazy, crazy week where I was in Nashville, New York, Washington, Cincinnati, Dayton, and back in Houston, all in like 6 days.
Wow. So Tebow was all of those places?
Exactly. Oh my God. It's so nice not having to really like pay any attention to him and like actually cover things that matter. Yeah, I covered that congressional baseball game.
Yeah, that was great. Then you also did the MLB Twitter show that we have on Wednesdays now, right?
Yeah, that was like really fun. We just kind of didn't really know what to expect. And I don't know, you know, sort of it wasn't a trial run because it was on and it was live and it was happening. But at the same time, we were sort of just feeling our way through it. And we had it was so much fun. I hope the viewers enjoyed it, but we were having a good old time in that studio.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be joining you guys in a couple of weeks. I have a unfortunate series of Wednesdays in a row, but it looked really fun. So Wednesday nights, it's a Twitter MLB show. It will be nice to have something on Twitter when I go on a video that's not cheddar. There always seems to be cheddar videos running on the corner of my screen. This will be much, much better. So I got a couple things I want to chat about. First off, Colorado. That game Sunday, Nolan Arenado. I was wondering if it was possible to hit every single cool thing in one at-bat. A walk-off homer, a cycle, a fifth win in a row, a first-place team. A couple weeks ago, I wrote a piece arguing that of those three NL West teams, the one that was most likely to fall backwards was Colorado. I did so while misspelling a couple names of Colorado's players, so I should probably shut up. The Rockies have one of those good Twitter accounts that's kind of fun and they play along and are silly. So they had some good natured, I hope, fun at my expense on that. I was completely wrong on that, as I was with the spelling of the names. Are you down with Colorado? This series they're still close. The Diamondbacks and Dodgers are right with them. But you can go whole decades. I think the Rockies have gone a whole decade without having a moment as exciting as that home run was.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. And it was just like a topping for everything that's happened that's been going well for them this year. And so you could just feel like, I mean, you sort of felt like when that happened that it was, I mean, the excitement was such that, oh my God, this is really happening. Like this team is really good. Like we are going to be serious playoff contenders 2 months from now. And so you need moments like that to happen. I mean, you need a couple walk-offs, you need lucky things to happen to you throughout the season. But you could tell that kind of celebration wasn't just like a, oh, Nita, we won the game in this really cool fashion. It was like, guys, let's go. This is going to happen. It was so cool.
Yeah, it's funny. I was going back. I wrote about the Rockies for my Sports North column on Monday. And just kind of going back and researching, obviously, you know, when they had all this incredible attendance when the Rockies first got to Colorado because they were playing in the old Broncos stadium. But, I mean, they had 4.5 million fans their first season. Uh-oh. I mean, that is nuts. Like, and it's funny because even last year, they weren't very good last year. They weren't very good last year, the year before. But Colorado always draws fans, like, because it's really a fun environment. Like, it's a cool place to go see a game. It's a great stadium. It's right downtown. Yep. It's just a really kind of great environment for a game. And it's been a shame that the Rockies themselves have been such kind of a bummer, really, since, you know, they're 20 games over 500 with that win. That's the first time they've been 20 games over since that crazy run at the end of 2007 that ultimately got hot and got them into the World Series. It's been a decade since the Rockies have been worthwhile and really kind of worth paying attention to. But you saw the roar that they made when he hit that home run. Like, that was like, the example I always use in this is what PNC Park was when the Pirates played their first playoff game. It just felt like all these people that have been waiting to scream for so long finally getting the opportunity. I have to say, the idea of Coors Field with the crowd as it is right now in a playoff just seems unbelievably fun.
Yeah, I mean, that stadium has always been like one of the best places in baseball to watch a baseball game. And I don't really think of, when I think of Coors Field, I don't think of it like an empty stadium because of bad teams. And I, you know, I mean, we would, when I was covering the Astros and working for them, I mean, of course, there's only like one trip a season there, but it always seemed like it was a series that a lot of people showed up to. And yeah, I mean, they definitely, like, you know, Denver's not going to be ever considered like this great baseball town, but it's a really good sports town. And the environment down in that downtown, in that Lodo, as they call it, is one of the best, like, in baseball. And it gets rocking on a Rockies game day. And it's really easy to get down there. It's really fun to stay down there. And they really get behind their team. And so I remember that 2007 run. And when they got to the World Series, I mean, it was amazing. And yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what it'll be like in September if they're still in it, which I fully expect them to be. But yeah, that's one of my favorite places to go to. One of my favorite baseball stops is Denver. It's just awesome.
They are 20 games over 500. They are one game behind Houston for the best record in baseball. I mean, it's really wild. They've won five in a row. But of course, the problem, I guess, as such as it is they've won five in a row. They look fantastic. The Arizona is only one game behind them. They've won seven in a row. The Dodgers have had all sorts of mess hit them this year. They've had injuries. They have not figured out entirely their lineup. Though obviously Bellinger's coming and been great for them, but they're only one game out. Like, it feels like everything has gone perfectly for Colorado. There's a couple injury guys that are coming back in the rotation, and Carlos Gonzalez and Trevor Story have been great. But generally speaking, the bullpen has been fantastic. They've had these rookie starters whose names I can't spell come in and be fantastic, and they're having just an unbelievable start, and they're still only one game up in the division, where it's going to be super hard, never minding just Arizona, it's going to be super hard to save off the Dodgers, because they're going to keep coming. It would be a bummer to me. It reminds me a little, going back to the Pirates again, if the Rockies have this incredible season, have this super fun team, and end up playing on the road in a wild card game for it. because that division, if they were in the NL Central, they're up by nine games right now and they're cruising. And that's going to be generally the gauntlet for everyone in the NL West. But yeah, of all those teams, I've gone both ways on Colorado. I predicted them actually to get a wild card this year for none of the reasons for what they're doing right now. I thought some of the rotation would be better. I thought Gonzalez and Story would be hitting. I was completely wrong. But they're still better than I thought. I find myself skeptical of them now, but man, if you're someone like, not like me, but like another person who cheered for a team that appears to be terrible and having their season completely fall apart and starting to look around for maybe other teams to have as your kind of fun little, my team's out of it, I hope this team does okay, I would have to say Colorado would be pretty high on that list.
I mean, who wouldn't want to root for the Rockies? Like, it's sort of like you root for that underdog team until they decide to be a dynasty and then you hate them. But yeah, I mean, at this point, like, if you're like not locally, you know, like located in LA or Denver or Phoenix, I mean, when you're an outsider looking in, I mean, are you like really pulling for the Dodgers? I mean, of course not. Like, their Dodgers are expected to win that division. The Dodgers spend $200 million on their payroll. The Dodgers are deep at every position except maybe second base. I mean, they've bought a lot of that roster. They've developed a lot of it too. I mean, take nothing away from their abilities to develop an organization, because they certainly have done a nice job with that. But yeah, I mean, you look at the Rockies and you're like, Buddy Black got totally hosed by the Padres. You know, he reemerges as the Rockies manager and they're off and running, and he's like one of the most well-liked people in baseball. So you got to be happy there. And then you see, you know, franchise players like Nolan Arenado, Carlos Gonzalez. I mean, you see like things kind of coming together with everybody. And then they're just like a lovable group of guys that are like really easy to root for. So yeah, at this point, I mean, you know, I mean, you could pick Rockies or D-backs. I mean, I think that they'd both be great stories, but I'm totally like, we've both kind of been on that Rockies bandwagon for a couple of years. So it's kind of fun to see that it's actually happening.
All right, a couple of things I want to talk to you about. One is a little game I want to play, but we'll get into that in a moment. I want to talk about one other piece. I'm going to talk about two ESPN pieces actually going to form the rest of our conversation. Apparently ESPN does actually have some baseball reporters left. That's good to know, actually. Though it's funny, this piece was the main reporter. This was Marla Rivera, who is really good.
She's amazing.
And she's really fantastic. It's also worth noting that, like, this piece we're going to talk about also has additional reporting from, I think I count three or four people that have since been laid off by ESPN.
Yeah,
it's worth keeping that in mind. But nevertheless, this piece is excellent. It is called The Baseball Experience. That's my attempt at a Latino accent. It is a terrific piece where they basically interviewed 50 players throughout Major League Baseball. One in four players in Major League Baseball, and talked about the game, their experiences in the game as a young player, the culture of the game, the idea of speaking English. This came up with Mike Schmidt a couple weeks ago. This piece, I have to say, you know, it's something that I felt it was a really terrific piece. Marley Rivera, she's really good, and she did a really great job spearheading this. And it really is. It's funny. One thing that's really good about it, and I highly recommend everyone go check it out. It's on ESPN. It's called The Baseball Experience, 50-man interview. And one of the things that's great about it is, while it really runs a spectrum. Like, it's not like, here's Manny Machado getting annoyed by all these old American players, but there's a Miguel Montero on there who I have made fun of before for being a guy that's very old school baseball in a lot of ways. But showing how his experience is there, I have a question for you. You have, again, we talked about this. You've been in a lot more locker rooms than I have. One of the main things that really kind of knocked I thought was very telling in this piece was the notion of even the leaders, even team leaders like a Manny Machado or like a lot of these guys talk about how, Yadier Molina is a good example of this. They talk about, like, listen, I get along great with my teammates, but listen, of course there are cliques. I hang out with Latino players and the white American guys hang out with the white American guys. And we've seen that in locker rooms. And I've noticed, one of the things that in St. Louis, Carlos Martinez is generally the leader of that team. And he very rarely gets the opportunity to, you know, speak to the paper about, because he doesn't speak English that well. So they got Jose Ortiz, who is this incredible columnist who speaks Spanish, and all of a sudden Carlos Martinez, everybody understands him a lot better and sees him as the leader of that team. It is a thing I love about this story. It brings you inside the locker room in a way that's really hard to do from the outside. I'm curious, as someone that goes in there, you see these clicks. Have you seen this change as the years come along?
There's definitely cliques, but I don't know that it should be taken kind of in a negative connotation.
Oh,
like,
and I'm
you.
Not. I don't mean to.
Well, no, I think that the word clique, and I think that's the word that everybody uses. I mean,
including the players.
Including the players. But if you are a Spanish-speaking player who did not grow up here, and you have teammates who are in the same situation, like you're, I mean, they do put the lockers in such a way that they are sort of segmented. But they're comfortable, like, talking to each other in their native language. And so that's sort of, it's just kind of how that goes. I mean, I just think that I'm not sure that that's a bad thing.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like,
I don't mean to imply that it is, but it's definitely, I think it speaks, just to kind of hark back to what last week when Mike Schmidt, made his comments about he did not think that Asdrubal Herrera would be able to be a leader of the team because he doesn't speak English, which to me, I wrote about this for Sports Earth. I did my absolute best to give Mike Schmidt the benefit of the doubt as a little bit anyway, which is to say, I mean, listen, you look at the teams that Mike Schmidt played on, there were like two Spanish-speaking players, and Dallas Green wasn't learning to speak Spanish. But now, you know, yeah, Dave McAvin, who speaks Spanish. You've got even managers that I think are terrible, like Mike Matheny, have learned to speak Spanish. Like, there is, like, the idea, like, baseball is just different than it was when Mike Schmidt played, and the idea that a player could not be a leader because they don't speak Spanish, if anything, you would be it's hard to be a leader if you don't speak a little Spanish. And I think that's something that I loved about this story, because it looked at every single aspect of the experience. There's a great quote from Edmiz Diaz, who talks about how, you know, one of the big parts of the piece is about the culture. We saw this in the World Baseball Classic about how Latino teams were a lot more fun. They had a lot more and seemed to be actively enjoying themselves. And guys like John Smoltz saying, well, that's going to have to stop when they get in the regular season. And those are the big cultural issues. But there's also, like, Aledmys Diaz talked about how when he signed with the Cardinals, he got to spring training and he got to the stadium at 7, and there was, like, literally a schedule. Here, here, here. Here's where you hear at this 15 minutes. This 15 minutes. And to me, I have to say, that is a cultural thing that I think we are doing wrong. Like, that kind of scheduling is kind of, that is one of the things that sucks out of the fun of baseball. And I wonder if you look at all of these voices in this piece, and to me, I read these guys, I'm like, this is the future of baseball. Like, this is what it looks like, is these guys changing this culture more and more and more. And there's going to be fewer, no offense to John Smoltz and Mike Schmidt, who both of whom were great players and guys I like, but those guys are in the past. This is the future.
There is nobody less qualified to talk about the way that the modern times of Major League Baseball than a 60-year-old retired superstar white major leaguer from the 70s and 80s. Like, literally, Goose Gossage, Mike Schmidt, like, they have no authority to speak on anything because they don't know anything and they're just bitter.
And they're not even coaches. They're not even involved at all.
Right. And they're so they come off as such morons with everything. And even like, I was talking to somebody that was, like a retired person who is affiliated with the Astros in some capacity. And like, when all the concussion stuff was coming out and all the new rules at home plate, and he was like, oh, it's the wussification of baseball. Like, he was just speaking on, like, just going on about, I'm like, you do know that it was basically Bruce Bochy and Mike Matheny who were like in favor of having some more protection for these guys at the plate. Like, these are, it's just so stupid. And what we have to do is stop interviewing these people who we highly respect for what they did in the game and are so much less qualified to speak on this than any of us. And so they're going to get themselves into trouble. Now, that being said, there are a lot of white American ball players who do feel certain things about Latino ball players. That still stands today in some of these guys. And that is, that you cannot have a really, truly winning cohesive ball club with the majority of the players being Latino, because there's such cultural differences between these staunchy white Southern, there's only one way to do it, and that's my way to do it, guys, and the Latina ball player. So that still does exist in some capacity. I will say that. But
does that exist just because there are so many Southern ball players? I mean, that seems like the only way that could exist. You have to, the fact is like, look at the numbers in this stuff. Like, 20 years ago, there were just a lot. Like, it's 1 in 4 now. It's going to be more than 1 in 4 in 20 years. And so I almost imagine in like 30 years, if you want to see progress in 30 years, when, like, I don't know if you could have a successful baseball team with the majority of white Southern ball players on that team, because they're like, to me, like, right? I mean, like, that's really what this is. It's just a numbers game that's getting lower and lower as the years go along. Plus, a lot of these guys just being ignorant.
No, it's the white Southern ball players are never going to change. They're always going to be mad there'll be fewer of them. That's fine. But it doesn't matter. If you have three of them, they're still going to be pissed off that everybody is not like them, that they can't spend 10 minutes to possibly put themselves in somebody else's shoes, to possibly listen to what somebody else might have to say about their life experiences. They don't want to know. They don't care. It's their way only. And so that's always going to be an issue where they're always going to look at anybody who's different from them with a little roll of their eyes, whether or not they exude that, whether or not that becomes an issue. Some of them mesh very well with their with the non-white Southern, less educated people of this world. I mean, they still might accept that, oh, okay, I might be able to like you even though you just don't think and do everything like me. But this is always going to be an issue. And so that's where, and you know, they're going to get old, and someday they're going to be 65 years old, and someone's going to quote them, and they're going to make fools out of themselves, because that's just how it is. Now, I have evolved over time, when I first started out to where I am now, as far as truly understanding the experience of a Latino ball player. And that's why I was so glad I have not read through the entire ESPN article. It's not really an article, by the way. And this is what's great about it. It's mm-hmm. It's quotes, it's blurbs. It's very, very easy to get through, to stay with it and stay engaged, because it just goes from, you know, player to player to player. And it's like two sentences each, and it's awesome. Marley Rivera is a superstar in our industry, mm-hmm. Whether people realize it or not. I watch her interact during the playoffs, All-Star. I see her often. Seeing her interact, the way that she navigates through and gets to these ball players is a work of art. I mean, she's just amazing. She's one of the most likable people in our industry. So that needs to be said. But I have you know, understood over time that the communication issues that they have is it's you have to go to where they are, not to where you think they need to be. And I think we're all evolving. And I think that the fact that they now, you know, the attitude 10, 15 years ago was these guys need to do these interviews in English. They need to learn English. They're going to make a lot of money in this game, and they need to adapt to the language and try a little harder. And so that's why they didn't want interpreters to be interpreting for these guys post game. Thank God for Carlos Beltran that has changed. And so I think we are moving in the right direction, but there's no way to get through to the people who just don't get it, and they don't want to get it, and they're never going to get it. And as time goes on, I am less tolerant of the people who don't want to understand than I am of the people who are at least trying. I don't know. That makes
preach,
any sense.
Preach.
I do not speak Spanish, and I wish that I did, but I don't. But I certainly have bonded in very good ways with a lot of the Spanish-speaking players that played for the Astros over the years. There was always a commonality. I always and I loved what one of them said, one of the Latino players in this ESPN piece, about how some of these English-speaking reporters will use these big words. If you are talking to a Spanish-speaking player, do not use the word flabbergasted. Do not use, you know, these words that they have not heard of before. This does not mean that they're not intelligent people. This is vocabulary to them. So when you're speaking to a Spanish-speaking player, they are interpreting things in their head, and then they're interpreting it again to be able to say it back to you in English. There's two extra steps than any of us two more steps than any of us have to deal with. And so instead of using flabbergasted, use the word surprise. Say, how are you feeling? Were you happy with this? And just keep it simple. And so English-speaking reporters have a lot of work to do on their end, too.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, I touched on this earlier. It's also something that the frankly reporters could be better representative of. Jesus Ortiz, who I talked about as the reporter columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he's very good. I disagree with him all the time, but I always find him compelling, and I think that's actually what you really want from a columnist. It is telling you that the Cardinals are collapsing right now, and I've been curious, the best player on the team, what Carlos Martinez thinks of it, but he just doesn't feel comfortable talking to white reporters who only speak English. So Ortiz, who speaks Spanish, did this great interview with him, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, Carlos Martinez has a ton of thoughts about this and should totally right. is the type of leader that should be leading this team that we weren't getting before. I think part of that, too, is more representation in the sports media in that regard, to be entirely honest. But that said, it's just a fascinating piece, and you could not be more right about Marley Rivera, by the way. It's just terrific. So everybody check it out. I'm going to close with one more ESPN piece from Tim Kirkchin. Everybody knows Tim Kirkchin. Tim Kirkchin did this piece where he made a bunch of predictions about what baseball is going to be like in 20 years. So we're going to do quick hit here. I want to run these by you and let me know what you think, if you think A, this will happen, and B, if it would be a bad thing if it happened. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're shooting by. Here we go. Okay, first off, okay, in 2037, there will be a pitch clock, 20 seconds between pitches, and if a pitcher goes past that, a ball will be assessed.
Yes, that will happen.
And are you okay with it?
Yes.
There will be a limit on trips during the mound during a game by the pitching coach, catcher, or infielder. They have to be called timeouts. You get 5 a game, and more will result in the ejection of the player or coach.
Yeah. I think that'll happen.
Hitters are not allowed to step out of the box after a pitch. The penalty is a strike.
Yes. They're trying to already do that.
Yeah, that seems pretty close, yeah. That may happen in 2 years. Tradition of throwing the ball around the horn after an out will be eliminated.
No.
There are no ties in baseball, but the 12th inning will begin with a runner on second base.
No.
If a score is still tied after 12 innings, the 13th inning will begin with a runner on third base.
No.
Yeah, this is just about reporters. I honestly, truly believe that. It's just about reporters. Reporters and people who work for the teams that see these games every day and just want to go home. I honestly don't think
of it. That stuff is not going to happen.
Yeah, fans don't care. There will be a sabermetric coach in uniform on the bench with a laptop or some sort of device to assist the manager.
Yes, that's actually happening with the Houston Astros short season. A team this year. Sig Meidel is going to be on the bench as a person that's doing that. And I think that that's gonna be a thing.
I love Sig. I always think of Sig because of Fantasyland, the great the great Sam Walker book, and I was interested in him as a character in that.
The tandem is Morgan Ensberg and Sig Meidel up in upstate New York.
Yes. Okay. There will be protective netting running from foul pole to foul pole as it does at the Little League World Series in Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Foul pole to foul pole in the outfield, there'll be a netting?
Foul pole to foul pole. No, from foul pole to foul pole the other direction. And netting's to protect fans.
Oh, foul pole. No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. Let's see. Pitchers will be required to wear helmets or specifically designed caps with protective liners in them.
Yes. Because I think someone's going to die between now and 2037. So, yes, that will happen.
It's kind of amazing it hasn't happened.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah.
There will be a great effort to take outside the second base. That doesn't really matter so much. Okay, let's see. There will still be four umpires on the field.
Yes.
And the home plate umpire will stand behind the pitcher's mound.
No.
There are many, according to Kirkton, many in the game acknowledge this is the best vantage point to call balls and strikes, especially the horizontal strike zone. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
No.
For the vertical ball strike call, high or low, advanced technology will provide an augmented reality for umpires. The home plate umpire will touch a receiver on his belt and receive a signal, such as a buzz, to help him better call a pitch.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, that doesn't seem too hard. The rosters will be expanded from 25 to 27.
Yes, and that can take care of a lot of this garbage about extra innings. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Why do I mean, yes, have it 27 now. Who cares?
Yeah, everyone would be for that. The Players Association would love that. More jobs.
Right.
The DH will be universal.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, I think that as time goes on and some of these old people are no longer with us in the high positions with ownership and management, I think that the thinking is going to change.
I disagree with it, but I'm also not. This feels like the thing that is. I'm just going to decide, am I an old cranky person or am I going to move on? And I feel like that is specifically what that thing is.
But I have to say, like, being in Houston and talking to some of my friends who are like diehard Astros fans, who are like, yeah, I'm totally over being angry about moving to the DH.
Yeah, you guys have actually gone through it. That's right. You guys have actually.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, I don't even remember why I wanted the pitchers to. I'm so over it.
Right.
So, yeah.
There will still be 162 games, not 154 and 140.
Yes.
This is a radical one. There will be no American League and no National League. It will all be under one MLB. This will make scheduling easier and more equitable. All teams will play each other six times. 27 times six equals 162. The top 10 teams in the game will make the playoffs.
Oh, man, I hope I'm alive to see that. Yeah, let's do it.
I think that would be kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I don't know. I feel like it would hurt the rivalries. I don't know. We'll see. The game will.
Yeah, it will, but new ones will form.
Yeah, so. But I mean, I guess. We'll see. I understand. I disagree with it, but I can see it happening. There will be no Oakland A's or Tampa Bay Rays.
I 50% agree with that. I think there will be no Tampa Bay Rays, and I will be in full support if they're not being Major League Baseball in Florida coming up someday.
Okay, the game will not expand to Mexico or Japan or Las Vegas.
Oh, boy. I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's – I feel like 20 years. 20 years is, like, pretty fast. I, like, blinked and, like, 20 years went by.
I think it's going to be in one of those cities. I just don't know how it's feasible to – I don't know. I don't think it'll be in Japan. I mean, how do you play games? How do you get there?
Yeah, Japan. Japan's a lot. I can see Mexico more than I can see Japan. I can see Vegas. We'll see how this hockey team does. This hockey team works like
Vegas.
If the hockey team does well, I feel like hockey is actually the best sport to test it because there's a lot of games, but you know, it's not like, I mean, you know, like if you put an NBA team in Vegas, that becomes like a major destination thing. A hockey team, like you have to like, you need like a loyal fan base to make a hockey team work. So I feel like that's, you know, it'll be a good test case. I think if Vegas does well in hockey, you may see that, turn around a little bit. Okay. In before 2037, space on a player's uniform will be used for free marketing and advertising purposes a la NASCAR.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to just make our peace with that one.
I don't have a problem with it if it cuts down the commercial breaks.
No, it won't do that. It won't do that. They'll just have both. By 2037, a dozen players will be awarded contracts in excess of $500 million.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is right up Allison's alley. With all that money to be made, players will find a way to get their most they can, and it will continue to be an issue with performance-enhancing drugs.
Oh. The statement is basically, with all this money...
We're still going to have... Well, put aside the money thing. We're still going to have a PED thing in 20 years.
I think, yes. There will always be a percentage that will be doing PEDs. I believe it will be small. I believe it will be a small percentage.
Think it's a small percentage now. So
I do too. I will stand by my conviction, and I base this on actual conversations I have with actual human beings that play baseball, that they don't want to do them, and the reason that they do them is to not lose their jobs. They do not want to put that stuff in their bodies.
I agree. I mean, I don't.
They want the playing field to be even, and they get very mad when somebody is caught for it, because then they realize that they're still competing against players who are at an advantage because they're putting crap in their body that scares most of these guys.
We've legislated this a few times. I agree with all of that, except for, I mean, I don't know. The drugs aren't going to be scary in 20 years. Like, there aren't going to have side effects. And that's another discussion. Okay. Here's the last paragraph. I don't want to have another PED thing with you. Last paragraph. I just found this. I thought this was really great, and I agreed with a lot of it. So I just want to read it, and I want to know your thoughts on it. This is from Kirkchin. Change is inevitable, and change is often good, but with change comes concern. We worry that the game is changing too much too quickly. Baseball has always provided a way for us to relax. Baseball provides a space to spend more time with friends and family at a game. Yet as we move forward, we want fewer games, fewer teams, fewer innings, fewer pitches, fewer pitchers, fewer three-hour games, and less human involvement. That could mean fewer human beings attending games and fewer being interested in baseball. The game will always be great, but as we move toward 2037, let's hope less is indeed more.
Well, I agree with him in that. And I, you know, they're trying to fix the pace of play. The reason that the games have gotten longer over time, there are many, but one of them is because of the advertising that is being sold. So that can't be remedied tomorrow, but that's not going to happen. So I have a hard time, like, really feeling sorry for anyone in this entire situation that this is where we are, because there is one way that you can immediately shave off 20 minutes of time of game, and that is to shave off some of this ridiculous advertising. But yes, I they're trying to keep people engaged, keep people coming to the ballpark. A 17 inning game, there'll be maybe 150 people in the stands. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that there should be fewer games in a season. I think that 162 should stay, and I think that there can be ways to keep things moving along. And I'm glad that everybody's kind of on board with doing that. But it will take time. It's not, over the next 20 years, though, I think a lot of the stuff will happen, and it'll be sort of innocuous, because they're going to start teaching guys in the minor leagues. They're going to implement some of this stuff down there so that they are accustomed to it when they come up. And I think that is the main thing, is what you're going to see is like players are not going to be resistant to it so much in 10 more years, because they're going to have pitch clocks down there, and they're going to have limited visits to the mound. And there's a lot of this stuff that's just going to happen down there. It will be a natural course of evolving to where they get to the majors, and it's just normal to them. And then the bitter old 38-year-old veterans will be long gone.
Yeah, I might do a piece about this week. I'm kind of fascinated with the idea. If someone would have written a piece like this in 1997, and said, here are predictions for what baseball is going to be in 20 years. How many things, like, I mean, for crying out loud, half the ballparks had artificial turf in 1997. Yeah. Like, that seems insane now, you know? So, like, the idea, make predictions of most of the stadiums will all feel like neighborhood ballparks, where you, like it would have been an insane thought in 1997. So 20 years, every single day is another reminder to me that 20 years goes really, really fast. Really fast.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you think about it, like, the Braves just moving to a suburb, and, you know, it sounds so odd. And the whole thing, like, 20 years ago was basically like moving to downtown and having this nightlife and reviving your downtown experience. And then it's like, I mean, I'm just like, are the Astros going to want to, like, move to Sugar Land someday? Like what's going on? Is that going to be the thing to do?
I do not think so. I think the Braves are already like, this is my own bias because I thought it was a really terrible idea that was bad for the city of Atlanta and bad for the general Atlanta metro area. But I think they're struggling with that a little bit so far. I think that's countervailing to the popular trends in sports. But again, 20 years is a long time. Who knows?
Yes.
What will go happen in 20 years? It's a long time and very short. Allison.
Hey, one other thing though. I did read through that long enough to see that there's going to be a requirement for every new ballpark to have a retractable roof. And that 100% should happen. So the next wave of ballparks, I will be old and shriveled up and wrinkly and not really caring anymore. But every ballpark, like if the Pirates someday want to build themselves a new ballpark because this one's outdated, they better put a roof on that place. Put a roof on it. It will pay for itself by the people that still come to your baseball games because there's no weather situations.
Yes, I am. I was thinking about things in the world that break my heart. And among the top 15, along with, you know, human suffering and injustice around the planet, it's thinking that you're going to a game and having it either get rained out or just be a miserable experience of hiding in the concourse. When you think you're getting a wonderful baseball game and instead you get something opposite of that. But human suffering's worse. But, you know, it's still pretty bad.
But yeah, but I mean, and then your inclination is to not go. Not
exactly.
No walk-up. There's no walk-up sales. The Astros will have 3,000 or 4,000 in walk-up sales every night. I mean, those don't exist in Pittsburgh. Like, when it's raining, it's cold, it's miserable, it's windy. You just don't go.
Exactly.
Houston, they're like, game's starting on time, no matter what.
Exactly. All right, Allison, this was as fun as always. This is a fun little time. We had lots of good fun stuff to talk about. So as always, make sure to follow Allison on Twitter, ALYSONFOOTER. Music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back, I suspect, with Allison next week. Thanks for chatting with me, Allison. That was really fun.
Good times, Will. Thank you.
All right, peace. All-Star Game's like 2 weeks away, by the way, so we'll chat once before then, and then we'll talk when we get there. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be back next week. Bye.